Hello, everybody, and welcome to Geek Actually, episode 142 for the 6th of August, 2011. And I've got to tell you, Josh, right now, that the fact that it's August is terrifying me. Because it's just this year is going by, poof, like that.
It's actually, yeah, it's going by. Just, but come on, man. I mean, like, we've had some good times. I mean, we've set ourselves goals, and we kind of smashed that within a month. So now we're at the halfway mark where we were supposed to.
We had to set all new goals, yeah.
Yeah, we're kind of going, yeah, well, I guess we need to aim really high now.
All right, I'm Dave McVeigh. That was Josh Philpott, and here in the middle of the table, which is completely throwing him out, our returning guest, Richard Gray from TheRealBits.com. How are you, Richard?
I don't know where I am. It's really throwing me out.
Okay, let me give you a hint. You're in my studio.
Right.
It's Saturday afternoon.
Are there kittens? That's what I want to know.
He's downstairs.
Okay.
Not exactly a kitten, though. This is the all-new Geek, actually. This is where we took the old tech show and the old after show, smooshed them together, and kind of came up with a show that really talks about nothing really at all, but, you know, we kind of just have fun with it anyway. So if you want to come and join the fun, you can always join us live at geekactually.com/live. We go out, we start our broadcasting day usually at around 12 p.m. ish, kind of.
Yeah, why not?
12:20 today, but you know, we try and do our best. And that's, of course,
you try to do your best.
Sorry. I always try and do my best. I always fall short, but I always try and do my best.
But you keep trying, and that's what we come back
that's
for.
That's what counts. And of course, that's all in Australian Eastern Standard Times, UTC plus 10, if you want to join us. Okay, we're going to start this show off. Oh, and I should say that this is the Dueling Links show again, second week in a row. Clara Tungle sent a million links delta, so you really got competition here. So I'm really good. It's taking me longer to do the show, though, because I'm kind of parsing two sources of links.
Parsing,
it's a good word.
I thought it was a good word.
All right, we have some feedback, though. In fact, we have quite a lot of feedback. So this first feedback comes from David C., he says, "Hi, geeks. Just started listening to your show, and I am enjoying it, but I had to comment." So Apple is losing out by not having Blu-ray. Sorry, Richard. This is actually from last week. We were talking about 3D Blu-ray, stuff like that. So Apple is losing out by not having Blu-rays for 3D. Sorry, no. Although I do wish they had better DVD CD drive in their machines. 3D is good if you like dark screens and headaches. Why would Apple get into this field that does not have a standard? Is far from being where it 3D wants to be, and vast majority of people see no need for it. The case against. There is a dearth of content for 3D. If you say games are part of the content, Apple is not what hardcore gamers look at. So why would they suddenly chase a market that has never been theirs with shaky technology? Ooh, I don't know about the shaky technology part, but anyway. An undecided standard and with lots of different methods out there, you're looking at the Blu-ray HD or Beta VHS battle, except on many more than two fronts. And expensive, very expensive. Changes to their hardware, machine power. You mentioned how much machine power is required to run part of the cost. He goes on and says, with 3D, they are far better to wait and time their strike at a much better time. See 5 or 6 years ago when they released into a very mature phone market with the iPhone. Let others burn vast quantities of cash over products that will not sell sufficient numbers to justify the development cost. In 5 years' time, the story will be different, but until then, Apple is right and sensible to avoid it. Note, I personally do not like 3D, so that biases my views on this. Mm-hmm. Now,
I'm glad he actually put that at the end.
Absolutely.
Because it's like, I understand what he means about the no sort of standard at this stage. But
completely agree with 90% of what he says. Mm. I actually agree completely that 3D is not necessarily the market Apple wants to get into.
Absolutely.
I think it is a very...
And look, to be ballsy enough to completely avoid that thing. I mean, it's a trendsetter sort of thing to do, is to look at something like that and go, no, I don't want to do it.
Absolutely. What we were actually talking about in losing market share, though, was not the 3D, but was the inclusion of Blu-ray. Apple is way behind on this market.
Yeah.
Blu-ray does have a standard. It did win the war, and they were right to stay out of it while all that was going on.
Absolutely.
But now that there is a standard, Blu-ray should be on the machines that are equipped with an optical drive. Now, Apple is actually moving away from optical drives. That's a whole different story. But the machines that have an optical drive, that super drive that is in Apple machines is out of date. It's crappy. It's slow. And all it would take is them to update one mechanism to put in a drive that is both a DVD burner and Blu-ray player.
Exactly. And they have the drivers already there for Blu-ray technology. There
well,
are programs.
Apple doesn't.
Yeah, I know. Apple does. But there are drivers out there for these devices. There are programs that allow you to use these devices. So it's not like it's not like the infrastructure isn't there. It's not like if you put it in immediately, nothing would be able to work.
I just think that Apple is behind on the Blu-ray scene. It's not the 3D scene. I think there was confusion. Sean was really pushing for the 3D aspect of it all, and that's fine. That's what he does. My comments were actually about Blu-ray. I think Apple really needs – they've got these beautiful cinema displays on these big machines, and all it would need – I mean, this is a 1080p monitor.
Absolutely.
All it needs is a Blu-ray hooked into it, and I can watch 1080p movies on this thing. And for some reason, they just are. And even their download content isn't 1080p.
Yeah.
It's only 720i. And so you sit there and you go, well, your download stuff isn't even 1080p, so why are you giving me a 1080p monitor if you're not even going to approach 1080p, you know? So that was my issues with it. But thank you very much for your email, David. We do agree completely about the 3D.
Absolutely.
3D at this point is a gimmick. We know this.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's if it keeps going the way it's going, and with the numbers that are being shown on some of the more recent 3D stuff, because 3D was taking a dump there for a while, but some of the more recent 3D, 3D might still be around for a little bit longer yet, I think. We got this email in from Matt. This is actually a visual. Now, it's in the show notes. So for the people who are listening to the podcast after the fact, go to the show notes and have a look. I'm going to show you the picture here for the chat room. It's this here. It's one of those black box inspiration posters. Yeah. And it just says, quite frankly, adaptation. The bad news is robots can do your job now. The good news is we're now hiring robot repair technicians. The worst news is we're working on robot fixing robots, and we do not anticipate any further good news. And I just thought that was really cute and kind of fits in with our whole robot apocalypse theme. So thank you very much for sending us that. He actually does have a little note with us. He says, hi, guys, my apologies. I sent this to the wrong address. I forgot you'd change names and combine shows. You should really mention that in the show somewhere. Let me think about that.
Every show.
Right?
Yeah, every show. I was just making sure that was okay.
Keep up the good work as the internet's independent robot apocalypse news service. We do our best.
Right. Someone's got to do it.
Absolutely.
I wasn't afraid of the impending robot apocalypse until I started coming on
this
show.
Let me show you some of the stuff we've talked about in the past, Richard. ever since Knight Rider 2000, I've been wondering when they will get this up and running, and it looks like they're getting there. This is from our friend Tristan, and I have the video, and I have a photo for you. What he's talking about is a link that's in our show notes, and you can go and actually look at this link yourself. Now, these very industrious people have taken this OutRun console, which is on screen right now, and you can follow this link, and they basically put wheels on it and turned it into a drivable car. Then they put cameras on it, and they use augmented reality so that – you know what? Let me let the guy explain it to you, okay? Because I think he can do it better than me. Here is the man talking about his new device.
Hi, I'm Garnet Hertz. I'm a research scientist in informatics. The project started with thinking, what would it be like if this driving arcade game could actually drive? There's a custom piece of software, actually a number of pieces of software that run here,
that
look in front of the car, try to interpret what features there are in front of the car. In this case,
trying
it looks specifically for roads, and then it draws that road shape in the style of the original video game.
Why not?
That's running looks like the old video game, but it's actually an augmented reality type of system that tries to make
the
real world look like a video game.
This is a man that played a little bit too much OutRun.
I think so. All right, so basically what he's saying is the cameras interpret the road ahead, translate it, and turn it into old OutRun style graphics, and so what you're seeing on screen looks like a game of OutRun, but it's actually the road ahead of you, or as he said, tries to interpret.
That doesn't sound like a place I'm comfortable with being.
No, the tries is the problem there.
Waiting for the story next week where man in OutRun machine greens off the side of.
Yeah. Callisynth in our chat room has said there's only really one question for this, and I think you asked this during the clip, which is why. You know, it's like, why do you do this? Now, I've also got a late last-minute addition to the feedback. This wasn't in the lineup. It's not in the show notes. I will put it in the show notes. But really, the problem is I don't have a link. This was a video that was sent to me, so it's not actually Like, so I'll see if I can find it online. It's sure to be around somewhere. But it was actually sent to me. I'm going to share it. This is actually a little video sent to our friend Robin, who, for those who have been following the site, is writing the analysis of the Twilight films over the last couple weeks. And the third one is finally in. So we will get that up this weekend. I think it's literally killing her. But that's beside the point. She writes, "Hi, David. I can reassure you that nobody dies. Well, at least that we can see in frame. Oh, the arrogance of human beings.
Oh,
cheers, Robin." And I looked at it and I thought, oh, God, what am I going to look at? And then I noticed that at the bottom it actually says, "Property of 20th Century Fox Research." So I think this is actually a research video that was taken for Rise of the Planet of the Apes. I think they went out and they shot lots of ape footage to look at mannerisms and stuff like that. This is from West Africa. And this is a bunch of West African soldiers taunting an ape. Now, watch the conclusion of this. This actually made me almost spit up my coffee this morning. I was laughing so hard, okay? Because all I could think was, damn straight, there must be something in Rise of the Planet of the Apes. Here we go. Okay, they're taunting him, they're taunting him.
No.
He gives the ape an AK-47.
That can't be real.
I love that. All right, so what we had there was the ape shooting at the soldiers with his AK-47. I just love that. All I can think is, you stupid bastards.
The one beside him had the right idea. He's like, dude, what are you doing?
Yeah, it's like, why?
Joke's over. This isn't funny.
Not only do they give him the AK-47, but then the guy actually shows him how to use it. He sits there going, ba 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 ba, like, you know, here, this is what you do. The ape goes, okay. He's pulling the trigger.
So they're waiting now for the impending monkey robot.
So if you are seeing Rise of the Planet of the Apes this weekend, there you go. There's a preview for you.
It's kind of the story wrapped up into a 10-second clip.
Yeah, there you go. So thank you very much, Robin, for sending that in. You made my day over my Weet-Bix this morning. I went, oh, I got to put that in the show. All right, let's hit the show proper now. Now we've gotten through that. If you want to send feedback, of course, you can send it to feedback@geekactually.com. And please send us your weird and wonderful. That's what we really look for on this show, is the more weird and more wonderful, the better. What are you pointing at?
No, sorry. I was just following your train of thought.
Oh, right.
Slowly disassembled and then reassembled at the other end of that conversation.
Today. I told you that.
That's fine.
My noun center is gone. I don't know what's wrong with me. All right. Okay, so impending robot apocalypse news.
Right.
We haven't done it for a couple of weeks, and so I've just written in the show notes, the impending robot apocalypse is alive and well, my friends, and still going, because what we have is the first story is a bunch of scientists... Whoops, that's not the right story. I'm loading up the wrong page. A bunch of scientists have actually started to create a neural network.
Oh, God.
Oh, good. Nothing wrong can go with that. You know, nothing wrong can go with that. Nothing.
Wait, should I do the hand thing again?
Yeah, let's try that again.
David's gone bye-bye.
Nothing can go wrong with that, is what I should say. What could possibly go wrong is what we really want to say. Because according to this article, which is on Geekology, and they, of course, pulled it from another source, but yeah, it's a great picture.
So
I like how the second says, picture unrelated, but creepy as fuck. Okay. All right. It says here that
you're kind of still looking at it going, I'd tap that.
Yeah.
It doesn't have legs or a torso, but...
I'd plug into her neural network.
There you go.
Someone had to do it.
Okay, so according to the evil mad scientists at California Institute of Technology... They say that this rudimentary neural network works on a simple input-output mechanism called a strand displacement cascade. Big words. Essentially, synthesized strands of DNA float around in water and join to other strands that have complementary base pair structures, creating an input. So basically, what it's saying is that this little strands of DNA in this pool can basically do yes or no answers. We're looking at binary here, right? So we're actually looking at the very first artificial brain.
Hooray.
Hooray. Wow. Woo. All right.
And I, for one, salute our new
every week, DNA. Every week. I think they've got it. There's enough podcasts of you doing that.
Yeah. According to them, they say when presented with 27 different ways of answering the questions, the DNA brain, quote unquote, responded correctly each time. Oh, God.
What the fuck is wrong with you people?
Don't they realize what they're doing? Don't they know? Anyway, all right. So with that in mind, let's talk about quadcopters.
Yeah.
How about quadcopters and...
Where's my quadcopter? I thought, what's the...
Yeah, no, Snake wrote to me. Snake wrote to me and said that he's getting his quadcopter. I think it's actually... Is it... Snake's in our chat room right now. Snake's bringing a quadcopter into the studio. Is it next week or the week after, Snake? Shout out in the chat room while I'm doing the story. Okay, in this story... I love this story. Because what they did was they had autonomous swarm robots.
Sorry, one more time?
Autonomous swarm robots. In this particular case, there's only five of them. But, I mean, swarm robots would indicate that we can have a lot more. Now, the idea is...
I don't know if that's really a swarm. I'm just saying.
All right, but when you watch this video, I want you to think about this very carefully. What these little robots are doing is they're all thinking independently, but they're programmed to follow their leader, right? And there's this one little robot at the beginning that's following the leader. Then there's a quadcopter, which is programmed to follow the swarm, right? And they're just given simple commands. And the simple commands in this case are... form a landing platform, and the quadcopter lands on the landing platform. Watch the video. This is fascinating stuff. All right, so we'll play this in the background. All right, so there's the little swarm robots. You can find this link in our show notes for those who are listening to the audio. All right, so there's a little leader drone up the front, and then there's the little drones following him around. And the quadcopter's parked up the back up here. Command is given to basically move around, so they follow their leader. And they're wandering around, and it's all looking very nice. And independently, they decide which way to take, you know, to do this particular chore. Quadcopter's going to take off in a second. There it goes. Okay. It's now told to track the robots, right? So it's going to just track the robots. All right, and so it's just following along with the leader. And we're seeing a centralized positronic brain here at the first car, and the rest of them are following, right? Now, the order is given to basically form out into a square. So they form out into a square. Quadcopter is still pacing them. And here it goes. The order is given to create a landing platform. They all pull together. And the quadcopter sees the landing platform and says, okay. Is that cool or what?
I think cool and terrifying both work in that sense.
So now they have mobile landing decks. Now we just put this on a great big scale, and we got the hunter killers. And it's a lot smaller to take your landing pad and break it into lots of pieces and travel single file than it is to have one big landing pad, you see. So
we are doomed, aren't we?
It's easy.
We are doomed.
What you mean is it's easier to go destroy a whole bunch of humans and then land on an already, you know, positronic... I'm just terrified now. I just don't know what to do. Jesus Christ.
All right. Shake it off, guys. Shake it off.
You know, I've liked computers... for years and robots and stuff.
No, we love computers.
We love.
They're our friends.
They're friends.
We love our computers. Like, please don't kill us.
We've never had, like, all those times I've yelled at my computer saying, you stupid thing, why the fuck aren't you doing what I want you to do?
Just
I didn't mean
it just doesn't get its hands on an AK-47.
Yeah. Look, you know, I just want you to know, I just want to put that out there that, you know, I'm like you.
Yeah. You know. We're similar on so many levels.
Yeah.
Dude, I am so screwed, man. I had a computer when I was like 17, 18 years old that just wouldn't work sometimes. It was put together by myself, so you can blame it on me if you want. But when that thing wouldn't work, it literally needed Russian level maintenance. So I would actually kick it to the point where there was a actual dent in the side of the case. That's like computer abusing right there. I'm fucked. I have no chance.
And you put this computer together yourself, so you're an abusive parent.
I know.
Oh,
so it's already got the idea
but you
that
know
the creators
yeah.
Are the abusers. So
I understand what you're saying, but at the same level, I want to put out there that I was just treating it in the way it needed to become
what
it was.
Oh, that's what every abusive
parent
says.
No, look, I bet it up and I did things, but then I added more RAM and I put new graphics cards in it. I was just
teaching it. But then you beat it.
Then you beat it. She bought a little toy to make
so
up.
So it's
for
like if you were in an abusive relationship, you bought her a nice dress and then you slapped her. Right?
Look, the point is, bitch will work when I tell it to, and that's what I'm going into the robot apocalypse with.
And just a bit of advice, it doesn't work with women. If you buy them new RAM after you beat them, it's not the same. And don't try and put a dress on your computer.
La, 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 la,
they
la,
don't
la,
want
la,
you
la,
inserting
Lee,
that
don't
RAM.
Kill me.
In our chat room, Delta Knight says, I pat my computer just to stay on its good side. and Freak says, do you think the computers will...
Wimp.
Do you think the computers will pull me apart like I pulled them apart? yes. And Callisynth wants to point out that kicking computers work surprisingly often until until they kick you back. All right.
Do you think there'll be a world where the computers just use us to look up porn?
Well, they just have to look at.
They'll just make us.
All right, we won't go there. All right. The Chinese. Look, I don't mean to. I don't mean
Geek to. Actually David does not in any way condone racism of any type.
No.
David McVeigh, king of the segues.
I didn't say anything bad about them. I just said the Chinese. I love the Chinese. I love in particular.
You have lots of Chinese friends,
I
right?
I do. I have lots of Chinese friends. But
His father's Chinese.
In particular, I love the Chinese knockoff market. I love how fast they work.
Right.
Okay? I just love this. I love the fact that we can have the most beautiful, most expensive piece of hardware or handbag or whatever in the world, and within days, they'll be saying, here, this one's only $5. You know what I mean? I love that. Well, they've...
Wow.
They've
beaten. You really did that, didn't you?
I did. I went there, and you'll know why when I say to you they've excelled themselves this time, because there are iPhone 5 knockoffs already on the market.
Oh, wow.
The phone hasn't even been announced yet.
That's pretty good, actually.
Is that what it's going to look like?
Apparently, this is actually based on the leaked concepts that came out about a few weeks ago, where they were saying...
That's amazing.
This is what it might look like. Well, they just grabbed it and just jumped on it and gone straight for it and said, here it is. Apparently, wow. It's actually much thinner than the iPhone 4. It's only 0.7 millimeters.
And it's curvy.
And it's curvy again. And look, I didn't mean to do any racial stereotypes there, but you got to admit that this is something that the Chinese excel at.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They have always excelled at this.
You won't be able to do this with the iPhone 5, though.
No, because you couldn't do that with the iPhone 4, 3.
3, no, so, that's no. What I like about the iPhone 4.
I love the design of the iPhone 4.
So that you can stand it sideways. That's such a design feature.
Yeah, well, you can watch a movie.
I can watch a movie. If I'm using FaceTime, I can just prop it up like that.
What if you haven't got it? I sit in the food court at Westfield, and I'm trying to watch something, and there's nothing to lean it against.
I have a Galaxy now. My screen's viewable from any angle, and so I just put it on the table, and it looks fine. It's like a...
I just thinking, what the hell was that?
David blows raspberry at Josh. Okay. The death of Flash is nigh, Josh.
Awesome.
It's coming. Adobe has just released a new tool.
I thought this was about DC Comics.
No, not that Flash. Flash, the awkward goddamn...
Every time from now on, every time you say it, I'm going to do that.
All right, so Adobe announced today a new application called Adobe Edge.
Mm.
And basically, it looks like Flash. It operates like Flash. It's got timelines, the whole thing. And you're going to drive me crazy with that. Yeah. But the point is, what does it export at? It exports out the HTML5.
Nice. So it's basically a conversion program?
No. You design your whole animation and everything, just like you would on a Flash design, but then it just exports out the HTML5 rather than a Swift file.
Yeah. That's well, look, cool. Dude. Awesome.
Fantastic. And but all I can think is Adobe created this. They own Flash. Are they trying to kill their own program?
No, because if they create one of the best systems of moving to the next technology, then they own that technology too.
And then Apple really has no grounds to bitch.
Yeah. Cool. And well, look, dude, honestly...
I was just going to say, when I was here a couple of weeks ago, there was a story about Apple now having the majority of the market.
I don't remember.
About Apple having the majority of the market share now in terms of the mobile market, and if they're going to be adamant and not having Flash on their phones, Adobe is keeping with the times.
And everybody who has phones that do actually have Flash, like Android phones, turn it off anyway.
No. As a standard feature, you don't activate it, because if you activate it, your phone would just die.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it couldn't run.
That's what I'm saying. But, so there's no point in even having the Flash there, because nobody uses it. Because everybody who has used it says it's buggy as hell.
I disagree. Like, the Flash itself works great. Like, I watch a lot of...
It doesn't work on the hardware. The Flash itself program is great. It just doesn't work on the hardware.
No. As in, you don't want to load up multiples, but if you actually need to view something and you click on it, it loads fine. It's like, okay. But people that are using phones from like half a year ago, I understand why they're still having trouble.
According to Adobe, they say the Adobe Edge Preview works natively with HTML. It enables users to add motion to existing HTML documents without hampering design integrity of CSS-based layouts. Yay, that's us.
Yeah.
And it also enables users to easily create visually rich content from scratch using familiar drawing tools that produce HTML elements styled with CSS3. Bingo. And it can import standard web graphic assets such as SVG, PNG, JPEG, and GIF files and style them using CSS3.
Now I just need to learn how to program.
This is an absolutely perfect stock standard HTML5 content producer. So yeah, we want to put like little motion graphics and stuff like that normally in the area of either animated GIFs, which look shit, or you would create a Flash file, which doesn't run on everything. Now we could actually create something that might actually work.
Exactly. And universalizing something like that will be great, and HTML5 usually runs nicer and smoother than Flash can. So, look, even now being on the other side of the fence, I'm still for this. You know, it's like I think universally we can all look at this and go, all right, you go right ahead. Because that's a better option.
So I just looked at the chat room and said, the iPhone is burnt into my retinas now. Blah, I'll bring you guys back. I forgot to take the iPhone off the screen. Sorry, guys. Sorry, we got so into HTML Flash. Yeah. Josh?
I thought I'd give you one.
Okay. Boring. I'm going to skip that one. All right. Microsoft strikes out at Google. Malcolm Turnbull was questioned about the NBN. But look, the whole NBN thing is such a beat-up. We have another story about the NBN coming up. We'll talk about that one. It's much more interesting. But Turnbull was basically questioned over... Turnbull, for those who are outside of Australia, is the opposition communications minister. Mm. And the opposition stance has always been, when they come into power, they're going to dismantle the NBN. It's a most stupid statement you could make. And, of course, they won't, you know?
No, they
but
won't.
That's what they're saying, because they just want to be an contrary opinion. Yep. And the thing is, Malcolm Turnbull is the only sane liberal there who actually does understand climate change and actually does understand technology. And he's like mouthing the words that they want him to mouth. But if you look in his eyes, you can see he's dying inside having to say this stuff. And when he was questioned about whether or not they're going to dismantle, he basically said, no, of course we're not going to dismantle it. But they have a different idea. What they want to do is they want to do fiber to the node rather than fiber to the house. The Labour Party has already fired back and said, if you do that, if you change the plan at this point, it's going to be an extra $18 million or something like that, some huge amount of money. Yeah. And basically, it's just a shitstorm. So that's it. Look, I'll put the link in the show notes. You can read it yourself. But
I'll just say that Malcolm Turnbull's the best Labour minister the Liberal Party's got at
the
moment.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I'm just waiting for the day that he actually becomes leader again. He wasn't leader long enough, but he will be the leader again. Because
I have no doubt that he will be the Prime Minister of this country one day.
Yeah, I think so too. Mm. I agree. Either that or he'll leave and join the Labour Party. best of all worlds would be if he actually joined the Labour Party and actually became the Labour Communications Minister.
Absolutely.
You know, that would be, that to me would be the dream.
Or Environmental Minister, for God's sake.
Or Environmental Minister. Yeah. Actually, no, yeah, I agree with you. Make him the Environmental Minister and Kate Lundy should become the Communications Minister. Okay, with all that out of the way.
That's our new politics, actually.
Politics. Well, we do cover politics every now and again. Microsoft. I love this. Microsoft decided that, they're just releasing their new product.
You know what I love about Microsoft stories, Dave?
They always end in tears.
It's like, when it comes up, there's that small part of me that goes, ooh, new news. And then there's the rest of me that goes, oh, fuck, what have they done now? There's like a 10% chance they've done anything intelligent.
Well, I'll give you a hint and tell you. It's the Microsoft promotional department.
Oh, Jesus.
Okay. This one's actually kind of cute. It's tacky and it could have been done better, but it's kind of a cute idea. For those who don't know, Google over the last 2 weeks has been under a lot of flack because it has become apparent that they're reading people's email, right? The Gmail is reading people's email because you actually get targeted advertising on the Gmail site, which means it has to be looking at the keywords in your email to be pulling that targeted advertising. So people are saying, wait a minute, you shouldn't be reading our email. Google's basically saying, well, we're not really reading it. It's just an algorithm that runs through it and looks for the keyword. No, you shouldn't be reading people's email, period. Mm. Microsoft has just released their new product, Office 365, right, which has email and it's all integrated into Hotmail. And they're basically laughing at Google because they're saying, we don't read your email, right? You should. And this is basically a promo video that was shown. It's not actually an ad. It's a promo video that was shown at a Microsoft event and basically is just having a jab at Gmail. Okay, so this is Microsoft's ad. It's called The Gmail Man. Okay, and here you go.
He's everywhere and nowhere at the same time. He peeks at every subject in unreal time. Probing every sentence and all your punctuation. Got his nose in every colon in every situation. He's the Gmail Man.
Zucchini. Volcano.
Lava. Birthday. Thanks, polar bears.
Hey, mailman. Listen. Are you looking at our mail?
No. I'm looking at everyone's mail.
How can you do that?
Well, sometimes when a person really loves their Gmail very, very much, the two get together and an ad is born.
Ew. You can't do that, mailman.
Of course I can. I'm not a mailman. I'm the Gmail man.
Gmail man.
I didn't do the whole thing, but there's another little bit here, which is quite funny.
Good morning, senders and receivers. Carolyn Johnson, get up off of that painful itching and burning of yours. Come check this out. A little relief there? Probably feels good, right?
No, what, have you been reading my mail?
No, just skimming. For
burning and sensation. Cat and dander. Good news is there's an ointment for 4 out of 4 of those, brought to you by Pharmaceutico. Would you like a free 2-week trial?
No, actually I wouldn't, because I was actually writing about a lasagna. I was afraid of burning, and my husband said it was sensational. I have a cat named Dandy, but you know, it's really actually none of your business.
My business, your business, it's all business. It's the business of advertising, personalized for whatever you're Gmailing.
Isn't that kind of wrong?
Who cares?
Who cares?
I like that. That's good.
No, so that's Microsoft basically saying, haha, Google. Google's opened themselves wide up on this one, I think. It's look, I don't particularly care about keywording and all this sort of stuff, but I just look at it and go, email is the one area which should be sacrosanct. You know, it's like that's the one area where we go, this is our private mail. It is replacing mail. Mm. And mail, it is a federal crime to open.
Yeah, I saw you send an email when I was skinning your email the other day that said exactly that. Yeah,
so I just... I understand there is an issue here, which is, of course, that it's a free web-based email client, and there are conditions that you're going to have to deal with. But if one person is skimming, who's to say other people aren't skimming? And then it just gets nasty. And I just think that we need some rules in place that basically say email is sacred.
This is one of the problems generally of trusting the cloud. You know, we're trusting that we put all our stuff in these secure locations and that's it. And email's always been, like since Hotmail, has been, you know, we put our faith in the cloud.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, I think we've only got ourselves to blame in some ways that we've allowed all this personal information to go out
there. Well, this is why I don't use my Hotmail or Gmail or Yahoo Mail for anything.
Any personal. Most of my really secure stuff, and I deal with a lot of, with my website, I deal with a lot of secure studio names and contacts that shouldn't be out in the public. And
it's I've got all my SSL,
own,
baby.
Absolutely. I've got my own email account set up for that. But still, if you're going to broadcast about, you know, burning sensations, I do agree, though. I mean, I'm not condoning Gmail in any way, shape, or form. I've only ever had a Gmail account just because to access Google features, really.
Well, and like Google Plus.
Absolutely. But, you know, which is probably why I'm not getting into Google Plus, because I don't really have all my contacts on there. But
I'm not about to load Google up with all my personal contacts.
That said, like, you know, it's the same thing with Facebook or whatever. If you're stupid enough to put all your personal information in a remote location, then, you know, you deserve everything you
Look,
get.
I use as an example, I use Dropbox. And I keep a lot of files on Dropbox. But I always keep a localized copy of it. And I don't put anything in Dropbox that is sensitive. You put anything in Dropbox that... I consider this. Once it's on the web, it's public.
Yeah.
You do your best to keep it private. But if you put it on the web, it's public.
Absolutely.
It's as simple as that. Yeah. So you've got only yourself to blame. So I use Dropbox for moving documents and stuff around, but nothing sensitive.
No.
You know? It's just not on. And if I do have something sensitive, I actually found an app for the Mac. I don't know if there's a PC version or not, but there's an app for the Mac, which is actually a password-protected notepad.
Nice.
So when you create the notes, it actually attaches a encrypted password to every note.
That's pretty good.
So that's pretty cool. So you can actually do that as well. I should have made that a pick. Oh, well, too bad. All right. in our chat room, I like the fact that... who was it? Callison said, when did Microsoft hire a person with a sense of humor? I think that's very cute. All right. Britain does an amazing leap forward in the world. And I just want to know when Australia is going to follow suit. America already had this rule. They've had it since the beginning. But, of course, Britain just legalized the fact that it is now legal to copy a DVD or CD to transfer onto your mobile device. So you can now actually make a legalized copy.
Thank you. You know? Like, wow, that's amazing.
How sensible is that, you know?
I'm reeling over that. I actually am. Yeah. What the hell? Like,
in Australia, it's still illegal. So let me make this very clear to our listeners, because there's some people out there going, yeah, I bought that CD and I ripped it. It's illegal. Yeah. In Australia, it is actually illegal to copy any copyright material for any reason.
Yeah. Oh, I'm not entirely sure about that.
In the digital act. I'm talking about the digital act.
Okay,
here.
Yeah, because previously there was always, and this is why it's been so frustrating.
Oh, in books you can actually do it for.
There's a whole lot of format shifting allowed for other devices. I remember, this is a weird thing, this has always been a problem in Australia. When cassette tapes first came out, there were talks of, for those people who remember talks of actually putting a levy.
They actually did, I thought.
I think they did actually for a short period of time. Put a levy on the cassette tapes to offset
people making mixtapes.
Mixtapes, absolutely right. And there was talks of this when blank CDs came in. Yeah. But for some reason, in the digital... And then format shifting was always allowed in other things. But Australian copyright law is stuffed because every single format has a completely different set of laws. So, unfortunately...
In the digital arena, and this comes down to... games, software, music, because it actually falls into the digital arena because it's digital discs, movies, DVDs, etc., and of course VHS cassettes, which isn't digital, but it kind of started all there, which is it is illegal to copy this stuff.
And it's actually interesting because there are some companies, and I think it's... I think Disney have been doing it, and a few other big companies in the States and perhaps in the UK as well, when they've been selling you... those sort of multi-format DVD Blu-ray things. You've been getting the DVD in there, the Blu-ray in there,
and the digital copy,
and a blank CD or DVD. If you wanted to burn that digital copy onto something to keep, for
whatever reason. I didn't know about that one.
Some of them have actually been coming. I have to look one up, and I'll send you a link if I find it. But some of them have actually been including the blank CD in there or the blank DVD in there. If you wanted to go ahead and actually save that digital copy, because quite often. It's a downloadable digital copy that you plug in a code.
What I love is the discs where they actually give you the digital copy on a disc. So you go into iTunes,
absolutely.
You key in the number, and it says downloading. But what it's actually doing is downloading from the disc into your iTunes, which is saving your bandwidth.
Absolutely.
You know, and I like that. You know, it makes sense to me. You know?
Yeah, it's the same sort of reason as why it was cool having physical copies even when you had a Steam account. Because essentially it's like you save yourself a gig and a half of transfer before they do the updates. And it's like if you're doing all of that, number one, the speed's always a hell of a lot slower. And then on top of that, you've got your updates to do before you can even play the game. It's like it was just quicker to have the disc so you could do that first bit of the thing. And it's like, that's what I'm saying. It's a lot nicer when you actually can still make a copy. And it's the same sort of thing. I think that's great because what I've been wanting to do for ages is just burn down everything I have on DVD. And it's just like to know that the law's on your side for that sort of stuff.
But it's not yet.
Well, not here, but I'm saying as a thing for our UK viewers.
I'm going to say right now that I do burn a lot of my discs into iTunes because I want them on my iPad.
Yeah.
Right? So I do a lot of ripping. And I know it's illegal, but it's something that in Australia they're turning a blind eye to because the law doesn't make sense.
No.
We have mobile devices, but we don't have the law in place to actually allow us to use it.
They expect you. If you've bought the CD, I mean, I don't think they care whether you're transferring it to your iPod because that's where I listen to all my music.
That's right.
You know, but... Yeah, so I think Australian law needs to change, to actually recognise that digital is not this scary new thing.
In America, it's always been saying, and the Australians seem to think they have the same law, and they don't.
No.
But in America, it is actually in the law. It's legal to make one backup of your digital media for personal use.
Absolutely.
So, in other words, it is legal to rip your your CDs to iTunes to play on your iPod. That's your one legal backup, right?
Yeah.
And this is, of course, the way that Napster was worked for many times, because they'd say, yeah, it's legal to make one legal backup, and I'm putting it online. It's like, and of course, that's not legal, but it is legal to make one copy. But in Australia, this law has not been changed, and they're selling all these digital devices, and technically we're all breaking the law, because we all buy our CDs or whatever it is, we rip them to our iPod mobile devices, what have you. We get a movie, I rip the DVD, put it into iTunes, put it on my iPad, I've broken the law, you know?
Yeah.
That's how you sit there and go, dudes, update.
Yeah.
Catch up. You know, it's time to catch up. So Britain is taken. Now, England is a lot closer to us in copyright laws.
Yes, absolutely.
And so all I can think is if England is making this move, the head of the Commonwealth countries is making this move, maybe we will see movement finally on this front.
Look, I think probably the only reason it hasn't happened is it's no one's brought it up yet, really. I don't think it's really been a big push. I mean, between the other copyright issues that we've been talking about and the other major communications issues in Australia in the last couple of years, including the R18 for games and the National Broadband Network, no one's really thought to actually think about this thing that no one's really worried about in the first place.
Yeah, exactly. So, Callison has brought up a very good point, something we failed to mention. Although in America it is illegal to break the encryption on the DVDs, so when you rip them, so while they have fair use, many of them are breaking the DMCA. So it is legal to make a copy of it, but in breaking the encryption, you're actually breaking the law. So it's kind of a double-edged sword. But CDs don't have that sort of encryption.
No.
So you can make that legal copy. Yeah, but anytime you break a copy code or copy protection of some kind, that's a different story.
Yeah.
But the fact that the DVDs are still encrypted is actually insane, considering that is all public record. That key is all public record now anyway. So the fact that they still bother to try and encrypt DVDs makes no sense.
Don't get me started on region coding either.
Well, and region coding annoys the hell out of me, because in Australia it's actually illegal to region code.
For DVD, but not for Blu-ray.
That's right. And that's what I was about to say, is that here, if you buy a Blu-ray player, the first thing that your salesman will say to you is, here's your new Blu-ray player, which says Region 4 on the side, but then they give you the instructions on how to unlock it. Because by law, if you ask, they have to tell you, because it's illegal to region code DVD players. Then Blu-ray comes along, and they've got regions again. And you sit there and go, didn't we already fight this battle? Why are they suddenly region coded, region locked again?
Which wouldn't be a problem as much here in Australia. I mean, like, I understand that studios need to release things at different times in different parts of the world. I don't begrudge them that. But if the fact is, there's a lot of stuff that just doesn't get released here in Australia.
Agreed.
If that wasn't such a major problem, or there are additions that you can get in the States that you can't get here, if that wasn't a problem, then I'd say, yeah, that's fine. Keep your region coding. I don't care. But things like, for film lovers, the Criterion Collection, which is this beautiful Blu-ray copies of some of the best films of the last 100 years, you can't play those on the majority of Australian Blu-ray players, and certainly can't play it in a PS3 because it's region locked to region A.
And to add salt to the wound, Criterion Collection doesn't release in Australia.
Absolutely.
So,
but it's worse when Criterion's an example, because they're one company that have a limited license to do certain things, and they've only got a license to release in North America and Canada. Fair enough. But when you're talking about major studios, I think Fox is one of them, I might even be one of the last major ones that still region codes a lot of their stuff the US. What's the point? And we're talking about major releases.
Well, Warner Brothers doesn't region code anything.
So Warner Brothers never has, because they were originally favoring HD DVD as a format, and HD DVD as a format was, one, superior, two, was never region coded, and it actually had a standard from the start, which was why it, but of course it being the better format, lost the war.
Because porn adopted Blu-ray.
Absolutely.
Just like porn adopted VHS. So.
Yeah, I mean, I don't begrudge. I mean, Blu-ray looks fantastic.
Yeah, it does.
And it's now caught up to our HD.
I always thought as well, let's face it, Blu-ray won the battle because Blu-ray is a sexier name than HD DVD. And the boxes are
And it's also easier to say. HD DVD is just so annoying.
Yeah. I get stuck on it every single time. Yeah.
It's the break in between. It's the HD DVD. It's like, no.
Yeah.
It needs to be a flow.
Freak in our chat room says encryption should be illegal on DVDs and music. I agree. I think encryption is... look, and we're finally reached a point with music where DRM has finally died.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So let's get rid of DRM on video now, and then we're all happy, you know?
Yeah. I mean, look, you know, I just want to quickly say that I'm in the library world. I know we're running late. In the library world...
There's no rules on this show.
Books in electronic format and in print format, again, completely different rules. DRM there is a massive, massive problem.
And the thing about DRM that makes me laugh is that DRM is so easy to break.
Yeah.
It is so easy to get around. I mean, there are, if you go online right now, you can find whole sites dedicated to DRM ebooks where they basically say, retail copy, DRM stripped. And you sit there and go, yeah, it's so easy to strip the DRM out of anything.
And it's because publishers in that particular case aren't thinking in terms of the digital. Now, it took the music industry ages to get on board the digital bandwagon when they finally did.
I still don't think we're successfully on it. And this is the problem.
But you can really thank Amazon and Apple for killing DRM music.
Absolutely.
Amazon first, who basically said, yeah, we'll release all your digital music, but we refuse to carry DRM.
Yep.
Yeah. And then Apple, who was carrying DRM, said, well, if they're going to do it, fuck it. Yeah. You know what I mean? And Steve Jobs actually made that beautiful speech where he actually said, DRM is killing the music industry.
Absolutely.
You know, and he just dropped DRM out of the iTunes
store.
And
not only did they drop DRM, they upped the quality of the MP3s. Yeah.
Well, they could now. You know, that was the thing. It was this whole, they had all these restrictions posed on them, and they basically said, we want to drop the DRM, we want to increase quality, and one of our stories, we'll just jump to that one right now, and basically say, they've now increased the previews in iTunes now to 90 seconds.
Yes.
So we can actually now get a decent preview of a song, rather than this little where it just starts and you can stops, you know? So they've had 90-second previews in America for months now, and it's taken this long to get here. So.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
So it's great. So, you know, we're seeing the music industry is actually finally starting to make sense. They're still suing people for $1 trillion, which doesn't make sense, but the transfer of music is starting to make sense. Film is still behind.
I actually spoke to a publisher when I was doing a paper a few years ago for mobile content in libraries. Yes, that's how much of a geek I am. I spoke to one of the publishers, and they actually said to me the reason. I said, "Well, why can't you do something similar to what iTunes are doing in terms of books and in apps for your mobile, for your electronic content? Because in the library world, and if you're a university student or you work in a university, you may not know that often it's the library that's buying all this massive amount of content for you, spending hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars a year." On electronic content that you get to use free of charge because we're paying these massive licensing fees. Now, what the publishers want to do, though, they often lock up what you can and can't do with that content electronically. And most of the academic publishers in particular have no idea about the digital or mobile market. One of them actually said to me at one point when I was researching this paper on mobile apps, was, oh no, we don't want to do what they do with iTunes, because when you look at iTunes, you don't see, you know, it's the latest Britney Spears song released by Sony. You see, it's the latest Britney Spears track by Britney Spears, and that's all you see. You don't see it's by this publisher. And they want to keep their branding all over everything.
Their branding is dying.
Wow. And their branding is dying. And that was actually the reason that one publisher actually gave me. And I wouldn't be surprised if that's how a lot of them are thinking.
And what's interesting is that if you go to the iTunes App Store, the publisher is very clearly stated.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, it's like it's a very different world. You know, it's interesting. Look, it's an interesting world out there.
We could talk for hours.
We could talk for hours on this, but I will like to shout out to our chat room, who's basically said, "Where is it?" James from Melbourne has said, "I can't stand people who say I can't see the difference between DVD and Blu-ray." And Sweet Pea 7763 has basically said, "People who say that are on drugs," and it's true. There is a very big difference between DVD and Blu-ray. However. The next point she makes is the only reason people wouldn't see a difference is if they're on crappy old TVs. Forget the crappy old TVs. If you're on standard definition television, there is a difference. You can actually just see the difference. But if you're on a standard def television, there isn't a huge amount of difference. And so you sit there and go, oh, well, what's the difference? It's when you get to a high def TV.
But
that's the difference.
But HD TVs are getting so cheap now.
Absolutely.
And everyone's got one. I don't know. There's not a week that I can walk down my street without someone's crappy old set sitting on the lawn out front.
Down here all the time, people dumping their old sets.
It's not going to be a problem.
Yeah, absolutely. all right. Josh.
Honestly, man, I'm really looking forward to the story you've got at the top of Geek Stuff.
Oh, really? We'll just jump straight to that then.
I was about
to say that the NBN was hacked. And our friend Seamus from Kotaku, who's also apparently the editor of Gizmodo. I had no idea.
He's just had a job change.
Oh, so has he? Okay, because he was on the Sunrise Show again, and it's like, does he live there? Anyway, he wanted to make the point that the NBN actually wasn't hacked. All the news services are basically carrying the story this week about how, oh, the NBN got hacked and it's terrible and blah, and the guy got arrested. Yes, the guy got arrested. He hacked a reseller for the NBN. He did take control of that reseller's servers and everything else, but the reseller wasn't actually connected to the NBN yet.
Right.
So he didn't actually touch the NBN. And wow. The whole thing is a beat-up. The whole story is a beat-up. So just be aware, the NBN was not hacked, okay?
He hacked the internet.
He hacked the internet. And the other thing I really needed to say just very quickly for Josh was that the Samsung, Apple Samsung fight, this is just amazing. Apple has actually managed to get the Samsung Galaxy Tab 10.1, the new 10-inch one, the sales stopped in Australia. So according to Samsung, they say that it's not cancelled. It's not, you know, they've come to an amicable agreement and they've basically just delayed the launch until after the legal battles are over. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
And that really annoys me, man, because I've actually had the joyful privilege of actually having hands-on with the Galaxy, the 10.1.
How joyful is it?
Oh, dude.
Is it joyful and triumphant?
Oh, dude. It's a beautiful machine. It's as thin. It's almost as thin as an iPad 2. It's probably a little lighter. It has the ability to connect a small device, which will allow you to use USB standardly on it.
It looks like a nice tab.
Well, look, dude, so far I've seen all the tabs that have come to Australia, and every single one of them I'm not for. We know my stance on iPad now. It's like I just don't think it's functional enough to benefit what I want it to be. I want it to be a computer. And I know that's myself projecting my opinion on it. I'm aware of that, right? Mm. But my problem with it is that I don't see a benefit clearly enough. I don't like the Android tabs because they're too heavy and they've got all this freaking weight.
The Galaxy Tab is an Android app.
No, this is what I'm saying. The ones that have USB on the side, they're quite wide because you have to have them wide to even fit a USB, device on it. The Icona Tab is a nice looking tab. Mm-hmm. It's just fucking heavy. The Asus Transformer is a cool concept that you have to carry around a keyboard, so it is a fucking netbook. Like, let's not try and kid ourselves here. That's what you're carrying around. And the Motorola is just an antiquated piece of shit. It's like, it should have come out at the same time as the iPad 1 came out. And then we would have looked
at it. Motorola Zoom was heavily delayed. It should have been the competitor.
It's a weighty device, and it doesn't have any other benefits.
I was playing with one at JB the other day. Yeah. It's big.
You know what I mean? It's just too big to be functional. And this is the one. This is the one that can balance the whole situation. And for those people that want the PC equivalent of the Mac version of a pad, this is the one you should get. And just to see it slide away again when we're this close to getting it, I'm just like, motherfucker, would you just do what you have to do and get it out.
I was about to say that for those who are immediately thinking, well, I'll just order one overseas, just a little anecdotal story for you. I won't mention any names, but I had a call the other day from a certain person. They know who they are. So who basically said, is it normal for electronics to be held up in customs? And I said, well, it depends on the electronics and so forth. Apparently, this person has bought a MacBook overseas, and it is shipped in the tracking order, and it's been stuck in customs for 3 days now. And I said to them, I said, okay, first of all, why did you order it overseas? And they said, because it was cheaper. I said, well, okay, but realistically, the price drop on Apple has just started. You're probably not going to get that Apple much cheaper overseas. The only thing you're shaving off of it really is the GST. However, if you import product over $800, you have to pay the GST. So the point is, I said, it's probably being held up in customs because you're probably actually about to receive a GST bill in the mail.
Yeah.
Which means you're going to have to pay the GST before you can get it out. And in the end, you're going to end up paying the same amount as if you just bought it here.
Yeah.
You know? It's like the only way.
Come and see me, man.
Yeah. The only way it's cheaper is if you actually go there, buy it, and come back with it.
You know what I mean?
To order it by mail, you're going to get the GST bill.
Absolutely.
And there was a story on the news 2 days ago where they were saying they want to lower the threshold. So all those people who buy eBay stuff overseas are going to start getting slugged with GST because they want to lower the threshold to less than $100.
So the idea is to fly overseas and just bring back a whole lot of personal items that you happen to carry with you.
Take an empty suitcase with you and then come back with a full suitcase. All right, Josh, your story that you wanted to talk about.
Damn right.
Okay. An unnamed 31-year-old Swede from
named
the town,
Judd Hirsch, right?
From the town of Ängelholm, started up his project 6 months ago. What was that project? He's decided that he wanted to build a nuclear reactor in his kitchen.
Now, I think I need a bit more depth to this
story. Apparently, it says that had he not been arrested, he probably would have succeeded. He'd already had his radioactive materials that he had sourced and bought.
Wow. Because that's just easy. He just went down to Kmart, right?
It says that he bought it from overseas and from a domestic fire alarm.
Oh.
Because fire alarms have nuclear, have radioactive material in them. Mm. He got a Geiger counter from the U.S., and the only reason he got caught, according to this article on Gizmodo, was the fact that he actually contacted the Swedish Radiation Authority to basically ask, what was this question? He actually called them, because he wanted to find out if his project was on the up and up. That's right. He basically said, look, you know, is this okay? And they went, no! And the SWAT team came and arrested him. He was let go, though. Because apparently he hadn't actually done it yet. He hadn't succeeded, you know? So they didn't have the charges.
Well, that, and also, man, I think when you ring up to ask if something's okay, right? When you do that...
You don't feel like a criminal.
You can't really class that person as a criminal. He's actually gone to the effort to at least ask if it's all right. Like, I mean, sure, go over there with the SWAT team, stop that motherfucker from doing anything stupid, but then let him go, because he's just obviously a little nuts.
He says that he was eventually released because they never actually detected any radiation. So there was no leak. And they said that it probably would have been better had he contacted the Swedish Radiation Authority before he started.
Yeah.
You know? Mm. And he didn't actually build the generator. Better late than never. Actually build the generator. He was building the reactor.
Nice.
Okay, so...
And because it's a Swedish
radio. So much better. He's just building a reactor.
Which has nowhere to actually put the power that it's generating.
Well, I think it's because it's the Swedish Radiation Authority. He probably thought it was a bit like IKEA, and he sort of got into that. He's got to that point at the end of the project. I've got this bit left over. Is it supposed to go somewhere?
Freak actually says he's not the first person to have ever done this. Yes, it goes on in the story. It actually does say that in Brooklyn, somebody had tried to do the same thing.
No sleep till Brooklyn.
Yes.
No sleep till fusion.
Look, handy hint, handy safety hint for everybody out there. Let's not go building unlicensed. Oh, do you know what I thought of, Richard? As soon as I read this story, I thought of you. Because as soon as I read the story, I thought of the other day when you said, you realize we're all carrying an unlicensed nuclear reactor accelerator on our backs.
Because I walk around quoting Ghostbusters constantly.
So there you go. Okay. Now, I wanted to point something out. This was a stupid story that I thought was just ridiculous. And the only reason I brought it up is because I want you to look at the shape. Okay. According to these researchers, they've been photographing this trench at the bottom of the ocean. It's really low. And they think they found a UFO. Okay. Yeah. And I've got the picture here to show you. Now, it says here. Now, once again, I'd like to point out Swedish sea treasure hunters. So Swedes again, all right? Mm. Swedish had found something extraordinary. A 60-foot disc sunk at the bottom of the ocean with what appears to be 985-foot-long impact tracks leading up to it. You see a lot of weird stuff on this job during my 18 years, blah, blah, blah. And he says, what could it possibly be because it's a sphere? And I said, no, it's not a sphere. Look at this picture carefully. It looks like the Millennium Falcon.
Again, clearly.
Yeah. And it looks awesome.
And when they went down there, they found this strange red, white, and blue object. Buried in the center of it.
Who's carrying a shield, right?
And suddenly I started thinking back to the 40s. For some reason.
So all I can think is, I think it's a hoax. I'm putting it as a hoax. I think the fact that it looks like the Millennium Falcon just says hoax to me.
You expect to take off from that thing?
James Melbourne would like to point out that if Sliders taught us anything, it's how easy it is to make a nuclear bomb. So did MacGyver. MacGyver was good at that.
Yeah,
he was good at disabling them.
Disabling them, with bubblegum and a toothpick, yeah?
You're forgetting the rubber band.
And the rubber band. Okay, good. Okay. Yeah. Now, Nicholas found this, my great son, the little geek. This was a late edition. I was putting the show notes together and I have this email just pops up and goes, Dad.
Oh, sorry.
He goes, Dad, look at this. And I thought, okay, I'll play it. And it actually made me laugh. It's just a little silly music video, but it's the lyrics of the song and combined with the visuals. So if you're listening to the audio podcast, go look at the visuals because the visuals are very cute. But this is a song called, it's just called, what is it? The Stupid Cat?
I'm a Stupid Cat.
And it's just basically the life of a cat. In song form, okay? And it is a bit blue, but we carry an explicit tag, so what do I care? So here we go. It's by Mike Polk Jr. Here you go.
Holy shit, it's another fucking day. It's the best day ever again. Cause I'm a stupid fucking cat and I don't know shit. And I don't know what it is to be sad. I think I'll run around for no good reason and act like there's stuff I gotta do. I have no idea how much the world sucks, cause I have no reference level. Holy hell, that guy's bringing me food. This food sucks, but I don't even know it. Now I'm shitting in a box box because I don't give a fuck, and the guy throws it out for me. Now I think I'll lie down here, because I got no fucking bills to pay. Sometimes I look out windows because I'm stupid as hell. Holy Christ, it's a piece of paper. I have no idea how pointless I am, and I don't even know I'm gonna die. Now it's time to go to bed, gotta get some fucking rest, cause it's the best day ever tomorrow.
Oh, hello, sorry. We were so busy enjoying the show that we completely forgot to come back to mics. Now, all I could think about that was it's obviously made by a dog lover.
My girlfriend texted me in the middle of that because she's watching live from home just around the corner.
Hello, the lovely Susan.
Hello, Susan. And she reminded me of a video called I'm Just a Cat Doing Cat Stuff. What? And you have to check this out. Just look up I'm a Cat Doing Cat Stuff. Just look it up on
YouTube.
I'll
have to find the link as well. Speaking of cat stuff like that as well, there's a guy who actually does a whole series of videos about talking animals. Have you seen that one?
No, I haven't seen that one.
And they are so... Because he uses the cats and he hasn't manipulated them all. They're just the cats and dogs and horses and basically all animals. And it's just their normal movements and they've voiced them.
Oh, right.
And it is one of the funniest things you'll ever see.
He's manipulated it slightly, but he's got this cat that has his uncanny ability to turn around, turn to camera, and open its mouth. and it looks like it's going, what? So he's done a whole video based around that.
I'll have to find Nicholas loves this other one as well. There's a series of them. He's actually got one where they sing A Christmas Carol. It's very funny. All right, this was just the coolest thing I've ever seen in my life, so I had to share this with you. This is a Lego statue. For our audio listeners, the link is in the show notes for the picture. Basically, it's a custom-made dragon wrapped around a rock, which has a built-in flamethrower. So you can actually have it breathe fire.
Dude, that is the best lighter ever.
Can
you imagine just having friends around and just having that out on your balcony and be like, oh, I'm sorry, did you need a light?
Boom!
If I was your friend, I'd be like, you're officially the coolest friend I have.
I just want to know how he managed to get that lighter in there, because it's all Lego, to not melt the teeth as the lighter is on.
There's probably quite a bit of wide berth. Maybe. And you're probably not supposed to use it for very long. So quick, put it out.
So you can have a look at the fire breathing.
Cool, I know.
Smell of plastic burning.
We have a story here. We'll just kind of fly by. But we have a story here which basically says one of the greatest ways to dispose of your loved one's ashes, they pack them into shotgun shells so you can fire.
Yes! It's official. That's how I'm going out. I'm being shot out of a shotgun. There will be a 12-gun salute with my ashes in it.
I just love the heading of the Geekology article. It just says, I just shot grandma. Company packs ammo. So, yes, you can go and have a look at that show note if you want to. I'm rushing through because we're running a bit late. But and this is quite possibly the greatest 404 error page in history.
You go
to websites and you know it says 404 error, and you go to nosh.com and you'll get this, right? Which is just a 404 error page saying this page isn't, but it's a movie. And you go, what the hell is that? So if you click on the link, you get this.
Hitman 22, this is 212 Romeo, be advised. We're getting a code 404 on a page in your sector. Intel suggests this page is hostile, potentially equipped with small arms.
Copy that, 212 Romeo, code 404, code 404. We have reports of a rogue site in this sector, but so far, no contact.
Rogue site.
Solid copy. Out. You got eyes on anything?
It's a website that's shooting.
Status? He's gone! He's gone. Copy. 212 Romeo, 212 Romeo. We have a code 500. The site is down. I repeat, code 500.
The site is down. It's no longer active.
I think that is quite frankly the greatest 404 error.
I'm going to have that as my 404 error on everything.
All right. Just before we get into weird food, yes, Delta's back. He found us one.
Woo-hoo. Nice.
It's not quite in the league of Natural Harvest, but it is there. It's interesting. But before we go, I just thought.
I think it's pretty fucking.
I think it's weird, which is kind of what we're doing, what we're on about here. All right, so here you go. A couple of USB sticks, Josh. I thought you might appreciate this. First one is for me, definitely. The first one is the camera USB.
Oh, nice.
It's a little camera that sits in the palm of your hand, and you pull the lens out, and the lens is the USB stick, which is just very, very sweet. And so that's about $20. But this is the one that's the kicker, Josh. This is for every geek out there. This is called the ISO stick. And basically, it's programmed to accept ISO files, so you can actually put lots of different installs of all sorts of stuff in ISO format, plug it in, and it reads it straight as a disk.
That is amazing.
It reads as a CD-ROM.
That is amazing. Give that to me now.
That is fantastic.
Chat room, Christmas present for me.
I want both of those, all right? So the ISO stick. At the moment, the ISO stick only supports ISOs, but apparently in future generations, it's also going to support BinQ files and DMGs for Macs.
Nice.
So there you go. I think that's just fantastic. Okay, weird food for this week. Delta, I got to tell you, man, this one I read and I went, wow, that's kind of interesting. I read it to my wife this morning and she actually went, oh, that makes sense. My lovely wife, Katie, the scientist, forever the scientist. Because as she said, my first thought was what she countered. Well, let's just talk about this first of all. Basically, gelatin, all right? Let's talk about gelatin.
It's made from hooves, you know.
Well, it's actually not.
No, I know.
It's actually not. Well, no, I should take that back. It is, but it's made from more than hooves. It's made. It's actually made from, where is it?
There's a renitin, isn't there?
Where is it? We can actually find, I should have had this bookmarked up, but I didn't. It is made from, they're basically scientists have been looking for a suitable substitute for gelatin for some time. Conventional gelatin is made from collagen. It's from inside animal skin and bones. Now, so for all those vegetarians out there who are going, but it's just jelly. No, well, actually, Jell-O and jelly are actually meat-based products. They're horses' hooves and other various products. It makes gelatin. And there have been some variations, some vegan variations they've been playing with for a long time, but it's never quite worked the same way.
Trust me, as a vegetarian, it's very hard to find an animal-free.
Right. Okay, well, and the problem is that this particular one that they're coming up with still isn't quite animal-free, if you think about it. This company has basically come up, not company, there's this group, basically, American Chemical Society's Journal of Agriculture and Food and Chemistry. Other people
it's funny, the color of this.
Well, that's actually thing. Not the product. This is just a bowl of
jelly. I know. But we'll come back to why it's funny in a minute. Just green jello, that's all I'm saying.
Green jello. Now, basically what they're doing is they're coming up with the technology to be able to grow gelatin with controllable features using human genes.
Soylent Green! It's people!
So, using human genes. Now,
that's awesome on so many levels because we all managed to do that at the same time.
All right, so basically what they're talking about is using human genes. You take the human genes and they grow them in yeast to produce this gelatin-like substance. And apparently it works very well. Now, the question I've got for the vegetarian in the room is, does it still count as meat?
Yeah.
Because it's not actually meat. It's not.
And I think I mentioned this a while ago. If they can artificially manufacture meat, how would I feel about that? Because nothing's died in the process of getting it out there. Again, my lovely girlfriend Susan's just texted me with something. Agar is a gelatinous substance derived from a polysaccharide that accumulates in the cell walls of agarophyte red algae. So it is basically a substance that you can use, largely used in Japanese cooking. It's an alternative to gelatin, and it's a vegetable-based gelatin as well. So that's out there as well. So there are alternatives to meat-based gelatins around.
But you got to think, if you could actually use human genes to create this, it raises two questions. First question is, why wouldn't we use this? Because it would be in mass abundance. I mean, we could take genes out of people right in the center without even touching them, right? Mm. Second thing is, does it count as cannibalism?
Yeah. That was where my mind was.
I'm always biting the little fleshy bits around the edge of my nails anyway. So I think secretly I want to eat myself at some point. So if I could harvest my own cells and
have a bowl of Richard Jelly.
Let's talk about...
Now let's mix in the secret ingredient comment from 2 weeks ago.
Oh, absolutely. Talk about your natural harvest right there.
With fava beans and a nice Chianti.
I don't know. So on the surface, this story actually seems quite harmless. But when you have a mind like mine, I look at that and I go,
I think we should go as far as a mind like ours.
As ours. Yeah.
Brings a whole new meaning to the expression, bite me.
James from Melbourne
would
like to point out in our chat room that vegans are bullies.
okay, I was kidding. Sit down. Yeah, vegans are bullies.
Vegans are bullies. At least a cow can run away. What chance does a carrot have?
I will show that carrot had it coming.
And I think James from Melbourne has summed it up by saying, Soylent Jell-O is people.
It's true.
All right, let's talk about our picks of the week. We're running a little bit over, so we'll get through our picks of the week. I'm going to start us off because I've got two straight off the bat. And I'm going to say that I have two, and they range from very expensive to not so expensive. in fact, my second one is free. How inexpensive can you get? My first pick of the week is actually, it was born out of a need. I can't afford it. I really can't afford it. But I was saying to my lovely wife that I've been putting up a lot more posts lately on the site. We're really trying to generate a lot more activity. And I'm a terrible typist.
Right.
A terrible typist. And so for me, it takes a long time to get posts up. Mm. I don't mind editing posts. I just hate writing them from scratch.
Yeah.
And my wife said one of her workmates recently actually broke her wrist and hasn't been able to type and has been playing with dictation software. And I said to her, well, yeah, but I've played with dictation software. It never worked very well.
Yeah.
You got to do all that training and, you know, and all that sort of stuff. And she goes, no, she seems to be having a lot of fun with Dragon, naturally speaking, right? So I thought, okay, I'll have a look at it. So I started to do a little bit of research and found out that in the 10 years since I've used speech recognition, they've made a lot of leaps and bounds in 10 years. And the Mac version, which is actually called Dragon Dictate, is written from the ground up to work with Macs. So it's not just some port. It used to be called Mac Speech. They've renamed it Dragon Bodit, or what are they called? Nuance Bodit.
Yeah.
And the latest version, 2.5, has just come out, and 2.5 is free for all 2.0 users. Now, it's not cheap. Let me tell you right now. It's $250. Okay? Yeah. So it's not cheap, and there's no student pricing on it. The PC version has student pricing. So if you're in the educational facilities, you can actually get Dragon, naturally speaking, at education pricing. Dragon Dictate does not have.
Well, if you can afford a Mac, darling, you don't need.
Well, exactly. If you can afford a Mac, anyway. So, my credit card's my credit card is glowing on this one because I couldn't afford it. But my wife made the very, very distinct point, where she says that you write exactly like you speak. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So there's no reason why dictation software wouldn't work for you. And I got it, and I've been playing with it. And look, it even comes with its own little headset, which is very cute. So you get that as a bonus, little Plantronics headset. This thing is surprisingly accurate. This is amazing. Once you literally read a story to it, which takes about a minute and a half, and it gets your speech pattern.
Mm-hmm.
Then, if you want to train it further, you can actually take text documents of stuff that you have written, import those into it so it gets an idea of your style of writing, and then you just go. From that point, you just go. And let me tell you, this thing, I do a lot of movie reviews, this thing accurately identified the spellings on names like Morgan Spurlock, Francis Ford Coppola, Steven Spielberg. It just straight out of the box. It bats probably about 95% to 96% accuracy.
That's really good.
It takes a little bit of getting used to having to actually say period and comma and stuff like that. But once you get into the swing of it, and I'm hoping it'll actually allow me to write a lot more posts. $250. It is available. Go out and get it if you're a Mac user. If you're a PC user, Dragon, naturally speaking, I haven't tried, but she uses it and she swears by it. So apparently the latest versions of the Dragon software is phenomenal. Okay. Nice. So that's my first pick. And my second pick is absolutely free, and it's for iPad users. Skype for iPad has now officially been released. This is the iPad dedicated version. Takes up the entire screen, has a lot more control, really good sound. And as we all know, that there is a trick with the iPad. If you've got the camera connection kit, you can actually plug USB headsets into it, which you can't do on iPhone. I tried.
Yeah.
But on the iPad you can, and I tried it with the Plantronics set that came with the Dragon. Worked perfectly. Great crisp sound. If you've got an iPad 2, the cameras work. You can make video calls. If you've got an iPad 1, you can receive video, but you can't send. But it's free. It's available now. And if you're an iPad user, why not? There's no reason why you shouldn't use Skype.
Yeah.
Who's next?
Oh, I'm in the middle for a change, so I may as well go. I've got two quick ones as well.
Mine turned out to be not so quick, but sorry. Mine turned out to be not so quick.
I'll make mine faster then. I've just got to come back from Melbourne, which I'll talk about in the film show as well. But I saw a thing while I was down there called The Art of the Brick by an artist called Nathan Sawaya.
Can you hold that thought one second? Yep. Just in the chat room. Sweet Pea said the PC, you can get it on Amazon for $45. Just be aware that if you're in Australia, you can't ship software from Amazon. Amazon won't ship software to Australia.
Yeah.
So that's the one pain in the ass about Amazon. They won't do electronics
they
software.
They only do media items, basically.
Yeah, books, CDs, DVDs, Blu-rays, they'll do. That's it. Everything else, they won't. Go on.
Sorry. And it's called The Art of the Brick. It's by an artist called Nathan Sawaya. I'm probably horribly mispronouncing that, but he's all over the place. He does these really great things. I can send a link to David so we can stick it in the show notes as well. He does these really great Lego models, and he's got one. There's one here we're looking at where it's basically a man ripping his chest open and all these Lego bricks are falling out. It's not your typical stuff that you used to see.
It's really good.
I don't know if you guys remember when I was a kid anyway, they had these big Lego exhibitions in City. And you could go in and you could look at all these different things.
That's actually where my son is right now, by the way.
Wow.
Canberra is having a Lego exhibition.
There you go.
So my wife and Nicholas have driven to Canberra this morning to go see the Lego exhibition.
And there used to be stuff like this all the time. But this is kind of for adults. This is basically artist who's doing this. And he's just sort of said, look, you know, there's a little artist statement up that says, you know, people need to get out of that sort of mind frame that this stuff is just for kids only. Because it's just like anything else. It's a tool and I can use it to create stuff. And the stuff's brilliant. There's another one that was down there. It was like a man swimming. And it was just so... realistic.
That image is fantastic.
So there's that. The other thing is, and it's kind of movie related, and it's not new, but I've just started using it since I came back from the Melbourne Film Festival. It's Mubi on the PS3. And I haven't used it before. Mubi.com, most of you have been there, might have been there before. It's just a place that you can stream really high quality films. You can stream them online. There's a huge chunk of them are free, but some of them are as little as $2 or $3 to up to $6 or $7 for the more premium titles. And it's just really good stuff. And a lot of this stuff is things that you can't buy in stores or you can't get any other way. They've actually got about a dozen titles that were playing at the Melbourne Film Festival. So these are 2011 foreign film releases, which normally people would... perhaps use some sort of slightly less legal way of acquiring. But when the quality's this good and it was free, I just watched a Mexican film last night, which was playing at the festival, and I plan to watch another one tonight. I watched it on a 50-inch screen streaming through my PS3. No problems whatsoever. Looked fantastic. Looked almost high def.
Once again, I wish I had a PS3. Yeah. Anything else?
Nope, that's it.
Josh. Cool.
Dave, while I talk about my first one, I need you to look up something on your iPhone to see whether it's cross-compatible.
iPhone here.
Can you look up Grand Prix Story? And I will come back to that one. My first I'm going to give him a slight bit of credit, even though I didn't see it last week, but Freak apparently already knew about this one, and I got given this one at work. Everybody knows that I have just recently changed phones, and I now have the Galaxy S, and I was complaining last week on the show that one of my biggest gripes with this device is that by about 5 o'clock in the afternoon, due to the amount of use I get out of this thing, I have literally flattened my battery, and it was becoming a huge problem because sometimes I wouldn't even make it home from
Grand
work.
Grand Prix as in P-R-I-X?
It's actually Grand.
Grand, G-R-A-N-D.
Yeah.
And then Prix as in P-R-I-X.
P-R-I-X. Yeah. Sorry, man. Juice Defender was the application suggested to me, and my battery now lasts until about 3 o'clock in the morning.
Wow.
So, look, I mean, it'll give me the warnings.
Can I get an iPhone app like that, please?
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's one of those things where it was like to finally actually...
it's not an iPhone.
Yeah, okay, cool.
It's not. of course it's not.
Yeah. The Juice Defender app is amazingly good at what it does. There are disadvantages for people that are really, really anal about getting their emails immediately and stuff like that. I know that I now have to turn the thing on and then hit refresh. I'm okay with that because to me, when my phone is in my pocket, it's usually because I can't do it because I'm at work or whatever. So
I stuff pushing all the time.
Yeah. and this is the thing. It's like I know that it turns off stuff like that, but it works well. And I'm glad to see that that's the case. Now, my second one is Grand Prix Story.
Which is not available on iOS.
Which is unfortunately not available on iOS, and I hadn't had time to check that. It is an Android-only one. It is the guys that do the story games. So.
Which means it will be on iOS. It's just
yes.
not there yet.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But these are the guys that did Hot Spring Stories, Game Dev Story. They also did the school one I was talking about a couple of weeks ago, Pocket Academy. This is the closest to the old style of games they used to do. So the ones like Dave's played, which is the Game Dev Story, this is very much like that.
I also played the Springs one as well.
Yeah, exactly. But Springs and even Pocket Academy are a different kind of game. Like, those games require you to build, which means that you're looking at a city and building them up. This is going back to that old school thing where you're more overseeing what's happening as opposed to building what's going on. So this game, literally, you're only controlling what people do as opposed to where it all goes. Mm. But it's amazing. You are literally doing a race. You're starting up a little race company, and you literally have to build your first car. You have to train your drivers. You get mechanics. You research parts. And in between all this, you send them to races, and you get to watch. It's only one lap, so it's not too long, so it never gets irritating. But you actually watch your little car go around the track and try and get first in these races.
That's very cool.
Awesomely cute. And then it's all based on the algorithms of how your stats are. So on corners, if your car doesn't have good cornering, it will spin out to the edge of the course. So you can actually watch your car's losing because of stuff you haven't upgraded, and then you go back, and then you come back to the race again and go for it. And it's hugely fun, and I've only been playing it this morning, and I literally couldn't put it down. Like, it was just because it's my favorite kind of game, because it's not too engaging, so it's the kind of thing I can throw on while I'm watching a movie, but it's engaging enough where I care about everything that's going on.
Right,
and the depth looks huge. Like, I've just managed to unlock car parts research and actually upgrading the add-ons that I actually put onto my car, so not only can I now install extra parts to make it go faster, I can then upgrade those parts. So it's like there's huge amounts of depth to it, but they've gone back to their original style.
Yeah, and it's
essentially what I loved. You should really get Game Dev Story, man. You will thank me.
Trust me. I'm going to get this thing.
Yeah. But yes, no, anybody that hasn't played either of those games, totally go out and get it. And I'm sorry that this one's Android only. It only went up this morning, as far as I can tell,
because I have been checking it. If it shows up on iOS, we'll drop it onto a future show.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And look, I'll let you guys know what happens, because you see, the biggest problem with these games is Carrysoft do the same game every time. That's not a bad thing. Like, when you've got a formula down, as long as it's fun, this isn't Call of Duty. You know, like, there's not a huge online market for these kind of games. So creating a game that works, that doesn't have all that shitty stuff where you have to go in and pay for money and you have to wait actual hours for things to come up. Like, this is a true simulation game, and it's meant to just have fun. You're not meant to want to push yourself to a particular part. You're just enjoying the experience as you play it. They do these games perfectly.
For you, Freak is put in our chat room, not all the time. You can set your email to push every so often.
And so I mean, this is the thing. There are things that you can, you know, do to,
sorry, that was off topic.
But because in Just Defender, I want the maximum battery life, because a lot of the time, like, as an example, I had to have it on yesterday, and I managed to shoot a whole bunch of pictures and video on my phone, and I still got home at about 8 o'clock.
Does the chat room know if there's anything like that for the iOS? Not exactly that one, but is there anything like that for iOS? Because
iOS has kind of its own management software.
It does, but the problem is that my battery for a year and a half has been perfect, and just in the last week or so, it's been draining off pretty fast.
You know what? I almost think Apple plans to do this every time.
Obsolescence, absolutely.
Every time a new one's about to be announced, my current model starts playing up. It started happening.
But I can't update my phone until June next year. So.
No, I'm locked into a contract until, I think, November next year. Yeah. So it's...
So, I mean, I will update when the new phone comes, you know, when my contract is up, because I do it every 2 years. I update my phone. But I still have another 8 months, and my battery is starting to die off, and I don't want to put another battery in this.
No, I mean,
I don't want to have to go in and get them to put another battery in for me.
Yeah, I actually broke my contract by about 3 or 4 months just because the 3 had gotten so slow as a result of the
update.
I had to get the iPhone 4.
Yeah. So if there is some sort of battery management program like that, like Juice for iOS, we want to know. So even if you can't think of it now, email it to us. Anything like that would be handy, because Richard and I need to scrape out about another 8 months out of our 9 months out
absolutely.
Of our phones. So that would be nice. Thank you. All right. Is that it? I think that's the show, guys.
Woo.
I think we're done. So we've got Dragon Dictate and Skype for iPad. We've got
some Lego and
some Lego
and Mubi, M-U-B-I.
And Mubi for PS3. And we've got Juice Defender and Grand Prix Story. Absolutely. Yeah. All right. And you'll find those in our show notes as well. So if you haven't heard them. All right. We're going to finish up here. Let's get ourselves out of here because we are running late. We've got to get this film show started. If you want to have your say, you want to drop some weird stuff our way, you want to just tell us that you know you love us, whatever, I don't care, send it to feedback@geekactually.com, or you can voicemail us at 02-801-13167, or just use the Skype ID geekactually. Richard, where can people find more of you online?
Oh, they can find online.
Well, that'd be probably the best way.
So, online, I'm at two places. I'm at therealbits.com.
Therealbits.com.
Therealbits.com, R-E-E-L-bits.com. Which we've just had a redesign today, in fact. So it's kind
looking
of
nice.
I'm
looking
kind
nice.
Of beta testing at the moment. So
it's very bright.
It is very bright. So
it's
let
like
me know.
Somebody turned the lights on.
Absolutely. See, it was so dark before. There's also DVDBits.com for the time being, and you can also find me on Twitter at DVDBits.
Cool. And Josh, where can people find more of you online?
RoadioC.com is a gaming website, and we're about to do the same thing and redesign our site. So look forward to that next week. We have a whole bunch of new content, and hopefully today, this week's show that I have just been through and painstakingly edited because it was a standardized celebration DLC style, which involved alcohol, which meant right. that nothing worked.
I actually watched part of it on the video replay.
Yeah.
I noticed you had a crash in the middle of it.
Oh, yes. No, it was fun. We had crashes in the middle, and we also had we had a false start. We started to kick off, and I moved my hand too quickly and knocked a glass of water over. So we had to restart. And this was before we even started drinking, just to be clear. It wasn't that sort of a show, but it was heartwarming just to go back and revisit and look at all of what it is and what it's become, and sort of the start where we had just lost you, and Nathan was supposed to be a you, and then he ended up on the couch, and then, you know, sort of just going back through all the great little times that we've fucked up intros and stuff like this, and just threw them up onto an audio board. It was great.
Sorry, Richard's having a love affair with the chat room over here.
James from Melbourne's worried that every time I look at the camera that he thinks that maybe I might be able to see them as well.
He's stealing your soul.
Give it to me.
All right. If you want to get merchandise, join our fan page, follow us on Twitter, follow our Facebook page, which our Facebook page has had a nice little increase over the last the last week. It's been good. You can find out all those little bits and pieces of news. Just go to geekactually.com. There's a follow us link. You'll be able to follow all of that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. I still haven't been able to work out a short code for the Google Plus, and I feel like I'm a moron here. I feel like I don't know what I'm doing wrong, but I will figure that out. I haven't had enough time to actually sit and really work on it. Anyway.
Do any of us ever really have time?
No, I've been posting a lot on Google Plus lately. No. I make it a standard practice now. It's like I put up a new article, it's like tweet it, Facebook it, Google Plus it. It's like put it out everywhere, you know. Remember, you can't watch the show live. I just snorted into the mic. Isn't that lovely? You can watch us record this show live every Saturday, roughly around the 12 p.m. is Mark, Australian Eastern Standard Time, UTC plus 10. My show notes still say daylight savings, but never mind. Geekactually.com/live. We are going to forego the shout outs this week. We'll put them into the film action show. It's just we're running so late. Normally we do a whole bunch of shout outs to people. We're just going to get ourselves out of here today. All I'll say is Real Junkies Funky Film Show reboundradio.com. How's that? There you go. All right, we're done. All right, and we're going to get ourselves out of here. Stay tuned for our film show. For those who are listening to audio, our film show will be out on Monday. This week we are reviewing Rise of the Planet of the Apes. So we will come back to that in just a few minutes. But for this very moment, right now, at this section in time, space continuum, we're going to steal Delta Knight's saying one more time, and we're going to say geek on, everybody. Thank you very much, Richard. Thank you very much, Josh. Thank you very much, chat room. We'll see you all next week. Bye now. We'll be right back.